As you are aware, Janine and I and Josh just spent a week walking around our nation's capital. And as we were walking, there weren't as many. It was not summer and comfortable. But there were demonstrations on the mall. There were people carrying signs, not all that many, but a few. It's the place of political power. It's the place of status. It's the place of wielding national might. And so people go there seeking an audience or trying to make waves or instituting what they would like to see changed. And as I've been thinking about Washington and our presidential election process, as I've been thinking about 2 Samuel chapter 3, I've come to the conclusion that the more things change, the more they stay the same. People are bound by their own nature, subject to conflict with one another. We, as people, can't get along, by and large. But there is hope. As we look at chapter 3 of 2 Samuel, it is primarily the story of three individuals, but really two, Abner and Joab. And as we look at their actions, I want you to also ask yourself, what is going on in the background? I don't know if you've been watching any of the political speeches or the election results. I like to watch them because there's always someone behind them, whether they're reading from the teleprompter. A couple weeks ago in New Hampshire, someone was reading from a teleprompter because there was a girl right behind the candidate mouthing every single word that came out of that person's mouth. I like to watch what's going on behind the scenes. Maybe unnoticeable. But what I want you to do is think about what's going on behind the scenes of this chapter. 2 Samuel chapter 3. Whoops. Is a political drama in four acts. Now, politics. You may say, politics has nothing to do with religion. Politics has nothing to do with the Bible. Politics is a-religious. It's outside of the scope of religion. Politics is technically the total complex of relations between peoples living in a society. It is the way in which we as a society exist within an agreed upon structure. Politics is what keeps things running. It is the complex of relations between elected officials and the elected, between, for the United States, the three branches of government. How these different things work is politics. And as we look at 2 Samuel chapter 3, we see politics. We see the government. We see the authorities. We see how they work with one another. And it's four acts. The first is epitomized by 2 Samuel 3:6. During the war between the house of Saul and the house of David, Abner had been strengthening his own position in the house of Saul. God's people were divided into two factions. There was the house of Judah, which David was ruling over. And then there were the other 10 tribes, or 11 if you include the Levites, the other 11 tribes, which were the people of Israel, the southern Judah clan, the northern Israel 11 clans, and they were warring with one another. David and his men were warring with Saul and his men. And that's the way it is in this chapter. Abner, whether it be for personal gain or because of some offense, has decided that instead of working as the commander of the armies of Israel in the north, he's gotten all he can out of Saul's people, out of Ishbosheth, his son, Saul's son. He's gotten everything he can out of it, decides he is going to switch sides. The first act is one of switching sides. Abner says, "That's it. You have offended me. I'm going to go to David, and I'm going to make sure he gets everything he's supposed to get." Now, we are not aware whether this is because of some sort of manipulation, some sort of advantage. Whatever it is, Abner has decided it's time for David to win. So, 2 Samuel chapter 3, verse 12. "Then Abner sent messengers on his behalf to say to David, 'Whose land is it? Make an agreement with me, and I will help you bring all Israel over to you.'" That's the second act. David and Abner make a contract, a covenant. And the rules of the covenant are pretty easy. I, as commander of the armies of Israel, will bring over all the fighting men of Israel to be on Judah's side, on David's side. And you just have to agree. David says, "Well, there is one thing I would like. I want my first wife back. She left Saul, who's now dead, your dad, took her from me. I want her back." And however Abner gets it done, Abner gets it done. Third act, 2 Samuel 3:25. "You know Abner, son of Ner. He came to deceive you and observe your movements and find out everything you are doing." See, the problem is, in this third act now, the commanding army of David, Joab, the commander of the armies, comes back. And we are not sure why he has taken offense to Abner. It could be a personal thing. Could be a power thing. But he is saying to himself, no doubt, there can only be one commander of the armies. And if Abner thinks he is going to be in charge of your army, he's got another thing coming to him. You know how he is. He is coming here and either he's going to trade secrets with Ishbosheth or he is going to take my job. Either way, don't give in. He's a double agent at best. And Joab says, "Don't be tricked." Fourth act, conclusion to this political drama, verse 27. "Now when Abner returned to Hebron, Joab took him aside to the gateway as though to speak with him privately, and there to avenge the blood of his brother Asahel. Joab stabbed him in the stomach, and he died." So Joab calls Abner back, has him come back from the well, and says, let's go over here and talk. And when he's there,
plunges a knife and a sword in his stomach, and he dies. And maybe it's because of vengeance, maybe because it's jealousy, maybe to maintain his own position. Abner is now killed. But, as we find out, Abner did everything he was going to do. So that's the political drama that's going on in this passage of Scripture. And we could spend the rest of this time talking about how God works in the government and how God works in the background and all those things. But that's not what we want to see here. What I want us to draw our attention to is not so much the political drama that's going on, but the two-part character study that is going on. What is Abner? Who is Abner? And who is Joab? Abner is, to put it in the best maybe not the best possible terms, but in better terms, is shown as a operator. He is a political operator. Less kind terms, he's a manipulative opportunist. Maybe he was enjoying the company of a concubine, maybe he wasn't. But he uses that as an opportunity to voice his offense to the ruler of Israel, Ishbosheth, Saul's son. And he says, "How dare you? You treat me like a dog's head." Which I'm not 100% sure what that means, but it can't be good. And so he uses that opportunity. But he uses it in such a way that strengthens his own position. Verse 6 begins with this statement. The houses of David and the house of Saul are at war. And Abner is strengthening his own position. He's using this conflict for his own benefit. Sometimes he uses what I'm going to call God talk. Verse 9, for example. "May God deal with Abner, be it ever so severely, if I don't do exactly what God has ordered." Oh, sometimes in order to get what we want, we shape it around talking with things, with words that sound spiritual. Verse 18. "For the Lord promised David," Abner says, "whatever's going to work in my situation, I'm going to exploit and pursue and seek some sort of advantage." And that's what Abner is like. On the other side of this character study, there's the smooth operator that's going around twisting words and shaping phrases, just slick. On the other side is the muscle, the brute operator, the act first, ask questions later. He is an ideologue. He, Joab, is an ideologue. He has a knowledge of what is right and what is wrong, and he acts on either. He filters everything he does through, is this right or is this wrong? And so he looks at David and says, "You are God's anointed, and nothing else matters. If that means I kill Abner, that means I kill Abner. Who cares? You're God's anointed." Makes him an excellent warrior. Doesn't make him a great leader, but makes him a great warrior. And you have these two people in conflict with one another. The one who uses words and manipulation versus the one who uses strength and violence. And there in the middle is David. The person of God stands there in the middle. He listens to what Abner has to say and culls from it what is true. He responds to what Joab does, and we didn't read this, but verses 28 through the end of the chapter, much like in chapter 1, is a eulogy over Abner. A lament over the loss of Abner's life. David interacts with them, seeking to remain faithful to God amidst these dissonant voices. Both Abner and Joab, and somewhat to a lesser degree David, all give in to temptation. They all give in to the lust of power or vengeance or satisfaction. They all suffer for their sin. Abner dies immediately. Joab takes a couple chapters, but he also meets an untimely demise because of his behavior. But there is something else going on here that remains unhindered. There is a development that is under the radar, behind the scenes. God forwards his plans despite political and personality conflicts. You may say to yourself, why do we need to know what happens in chapter 3? Why do we need to be unduly reminded that there's violence in the world? Why do we need to see this gruesome display? Because God used it to further his kingdom. News of Abner's death gets back to Ishbosheth, Saul's son. 2 Samuel chapter 4, verse 1. When Ishbosheth, son of Saul, heard that Abner had died in Hebron, he lost courage, and all Israel became alarmed. The great leader of the fighting men of Israel died in an alleyway. We have no chance whatever. Within a couple of verses of chapter 4, raiders go into the palace of Ishbosheth. They kill him, and within a couple of days, weeks, months, all Israel is united. And after 7 years of civil war, Israel is reunified under David's rule. And ultimately, the reason why I wanted to look at this chapter of David's life is because all of us face Abner's and Joab's in our lives. And we need to be reminded that God is always working in the context of Abner and Joab. Many say, I don't read the Bible. Especially, I don't read the Old Testament because it's so violent. But the fact is that it is this violence is precisely why we need to read the Bible. Because there is violence all around us today.
There are still swarmy double agents in our lives that seek to manipulate God's people, seek to manipulate the poor, seek to manipulate the downtrodden. There are brutes who seek to exercise their power through whatever means necessary.
And we need to know that God works through that also. He calls us to remain faithful in those turbulent times. Both Abner and Joab end up as tragic footnotes due to their indiscretion. Neither of the men get what they want in the end. Trusting only in our own wisdom, trusting only in our own strength, will inevitably lead to failure. Our sermon in a sentence is this: sin will hinder our progress, but not God's plans. We are prone to sin, and that is going to affect our progress on the road God has for us. But it doesn't change God's plan. It doesn't prevent God's plan from being exercised. We need to trust in the plan and purpose of God, which will not fail. We need to listen to God and not just those who use God speak. We need to pursue righteousness and not just react to injustice by any means. We need to trust God and not his creation. So we can learn from David's dealings with Abner and Joab and understand that God's work advances despite our missteps. Sin will hinder our progress, but not God's plan. Shall we pray?